Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody, this is Rayanne Thorne, and you're indeed listening to HR Latte, a very special episode. We're not at our normal time in the morning because I have one who fit me in wherever she could, and I'd like to take a moment just to introduce Nancy Rubin. Hey, Nancy, thanks for joining the show today.
I'm very happy to do it.
Nancy, I'm going to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you have been involved with healthcare HR for many years. This series that I'm currently doing on HR Latte is Healthcare HR Today in preparation for the ASHRA conference that's coming up in September in Orlando. And I thought, because I have known you for so many years and have admired you for as long as I have, that I would love to have you on the show and talk to you a little bit your experiences as a healthcare HR professional. And also, there was something that happened a while ago that is not something that we talk about very often, and that is the subject of ageism. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. But if you could give us just a brief introduction of who you are and what you do.
Well, first, thank you for your kind words. Currently, I'm working at the Motion Picture and Television Fund. And the fund's work is to actually provide people who've worked in entertainment with essential health, wellness, social, and retirement services. We have bricks and mortar, and we also have people who go out into the community and help entertainment people with all kinds of issues around their housing, financial issues, safety. It's a very interesting place to work. I've been here just a little over 5 years, and every day is different.
Okay, be that long. That's incredible. I can't believe that you've been there that long. And when I first met Nancy, she was working for Providence Health Systems, and you had been there for 18 years, correct?
That's correct.
That's a long time to stay with one healthcare organization.
It is. I would say that I've worked in small places, I've worked in big places, I've worked in all kinds of healthcare settings and been in charge of some and actually been support to others. So it's been a pretty long, rich career of more than 30 years.
And what wonderful work that you're doing right now for the Motion Picture Television Fund. I know that at first glance, someone might say that's not a healthcare organization, but indeed, you are providing services, healthcare being one of them, for aging entertainment. And I cruised through your website recently, and I loved that there are these memorials for actors or entertainers that have passed on that have been part of the system. And I'm guessing that this is really rewarding work on your part.
It's very interesting. We have about 200 residents on the campus. Many of them live to be over 100 because they're not socially isolated. They get good care. They have a say in what their life is about. They're very active, and we have a state-of-the-art gym. They really embrace living, and that's been wonderful. But we also help those who are not senior citizens, people who work in the industry that may have fallen on hard times or have family members that are having issues and they need help. So it's really a pretty far reach. On the HR side, even though we do all the traditional HR type things, I personally am also involved with supervising the health center, the wellness program, and entertainment people being what they are. You just meet interesting people just walking around. They just are so interested in knowing who you are and wanting you to know who they are. So very easy to make new friends here.
Well, I love that. And I'm wondering, is there high security? Because I'm guessing there's some well-known folks, that residents that live there. What's the security like? How is it managed?
Well, we certainly do have security, and every employee has to sign a confidentiality agreement, which is probably true everywhere, but we take ours very seriously, and people know that if there's a breach of that, that's pretty much their ticket to ride. And employees also become so attached to the residents that they do everything to protect their privacy because they know how important it is for them. So I can't tell you a whole lot about the security that would give away our secrets.
Of course.
Yes.
So how does MPTF, I have to say this right, how does MPTF, a Motion Picture Television Fund, how does it differ from other healthcare organizations where you have worked before and been very involved with the HR function?
I think a couple of differences. It's a much smaller place for me. It's sort of like when I was starting out, I knew all the employees by their names and their families and their pets and all that, and that's pretty much the environment here. But I think the big difference is you really get to know the people who live here, people who receive services here. You go to fundraisers and see what an impact the fund has. The fund is sort of a cryptic term for Motion Picture and Television Fund, but you see the effect the fund has on these people's lives and how appreciative they are. And that's a little bit different than going to a fundraiser where you're sort of removed from the people you're serving. Here, you're right with them.
Right, and when you were with Providence, you were, something like 45,000 employees in the system where you were the chief human resource officer. That's a huge difference than what you're doing now. So full circle in your career you've come, right?
I would say so. You know, at Providence, it was a huge organization. I was in charge of at that time, which it's even bigger now, 8,000 employees in the region, and then helped with the coaching practice, co-led the coaching practice across the 45,000 employees.
Wow.
And, you know, you don't really have time to engage in the way you do at a smaller place.
That's so true, and I'm so glad that you have accepted this opportunity to speak with me. One of the reasons, a couple months ago, I did a series on bias that takes place in hiring today, and one of the issues that we discussed was ageism, and you and I talked several years ago, and I've actually written about your story a couple of times, Nancy. I'd like to share just a brief excerpt from something that I wrote about you years ago. Nancy is a former CHRO for one of the largest nonprofit organizations in the West, a highly respected expert in her field, former VP of HR for an association that benefits the healthcare HR professionals in Southern California. That was HASC. And Nancy was looking for a job. Why? I mean, there were so many questions. You and I talked about this. We met for lunch. We went over and over again. Why? Nancy is a brilliant, funny, kind, exceptionally knowledgeable, well-versed in all HR laws, a consummate businesswoman with an outstanding reputation. She consistently networks with her recruitment and HR friends, cruises through job boards, had interviews with top executives, retail search firms, but to no avail. Again, and we talked about why. And Nancy, we discussed that at the time you were 58 when you were looking for a job, and you chose not to do your hair, and you have a beautiful head of white hair, right?
Yes,
and
I do.
And you were not trying to hide your age. Actually, thought that your experience, years of experience in healthcare human resources would benefit you. And I have to tell you, when I first met you, Nancy, you were the person to talk to. I mean, the person that could buy your services, that would buy your products, that you were the person in the healthcare human resource space in California that everybody wanted to be sitting in front of. And when it came time for you to look for a job, all of those people disappeared, and they were not there to help you in your time of need. What was that like?
Well, I think there were a few that were, like you. But
good.
I think we have to be careful to know or to believe that others are always going to be in a position to help us, and we have to put the best foot forward we have. But it was very difficult. I knew I had helped many people along the way. I had mentored many people. It was a very hurtful experience not to be able to maintain those relationships.
Right, right. I remember telling me that a mentor had actually said, she actually told you, you're too old.
Yes.
For a role. And I can't believe it. And you actually said to me at that time, I have heard all. I didn't know what hard operate HR job was. I was overqualified. They were looking for a different profile. So obviously, they weren't looking for somebody that had experience, knew the laws, understood how to speak to people, how to mentor people, how to grow a team, how to take down a team. You know, I'm sure you had experience in layoffs and understanding that there are certain times within an organization when you have to decrease staff as well. And those are the most difficult times. And you chose, though, Nancy, you chose to not misrepresent your age. Was there ever a time when you felt like, ugh, maybe I should just lie about it, maybe I should take those few years off my resume, only represent the last 10 years, dye my hair, you know, take down the pictures on my LinkedIn profile, you know, so that they can't really see how old I am. Why did you stick to those guns, and what has the benefit been?
You know, I am a strong believer that we have to be our authentic self. And I have seen many people do the dyeing of the hair, younger clothes, manipulating who they are. But at the end of the day, you are who you are. You know what you know, and I never had to worry about keeping stories straight or not revealing
That's
something.
Right.
Because I'm not really very good at that. If nothing else, I'm kind of known for my candor. And so if that's true, then that's how I should act. That is part of who my authentic self is. And I knew I would get a job. I just believed that every day, and it took a long time. And I tell people who are going through similar things, you are who you are. They can't take away from you what you know, and do whatever you have to do to keep a positive attitude, because nobody really likes being around a grumpy person. And if you have to go out and interview, that will be the first thing that's revealed. If you can get into that interview and they really start to see you, hear you, understand you as you do them, you will win this game.
It's so fascinating to me and completely ironic that the same people that once bowed down to you were the ones that potentially said to you, hey, you're too old or you're not right for this job. It's interesting to me, too, when we understand, as you do, the HR laws, the potential for a lawsuit for a recruiter to say that to, that to you, right? And let you know, hey, by the way, this healthcare organization doesn't want to hire you because, well, you're too old.
You know,
so
what
kept you from filing that lawsuit? Because I think
I do want to say a word or two about that, because many people did say, you know, that's illegal. Well, yes, I did know that, but I made a conscious I made a conscious decision that I wanted to stay in a positive space. And yes, I could go through the process of suing and having all this negative business in my life, but I had a focus. I wanted to get a job, and I wanted to remain as positive as I could. Now, this is not to say I didn't have days where I was thinking, oh, I don't know. But those were fewer because it was a conscious decision that I was going to stay on that side of the road.
So to me, it was a good lesson that you have more value in this world than just your work, Do you still feel that way now that you're working and have this, another great job and are contributing so much to the organization where you work now? It's easy for us to identify as our job and become wrapped up in that. And when it's gone, it's so easy to feel like we've lost a significant part of who we are. How do you have any ideas or advice that you can share with? Because when I shared with people that I was going to be talking with you and we were going to be talking about ism, a couple of people actually said, "Oh, I need to tune in because that's what I'm facing now." How did you do that? How did you maintain that level of I have more value than the job that I currently hold? How did you do that?
Well, I think being out of work the amount of time I was out, which was 20 months, a lot of people I ran into said, "So what are you doing? Where are you working today?" And and it was initially very difficult. And then they said, "Oh, are you retired?" And I wasn't. I learned to really talk about a lot of things that had nothing to do with work. I tried to make myself an interesting person. Of course, I think I'm interesting, but we all think we're interesting. But I think there was some work sure. that really had to go on behind it. I read, I continued to learn, I involved myself with other people when I could be helpful. Even if it paid nothing, I did it because I thought it was the right thing to do. I just kept myself involved in as many places as I could and maintained strong friendships. So now, even though I've been here more than 5 years, and you're right, it's a wonderful job, the people are wonderful, when I meet new people, the first thing I talk about is not about my work. What I'm interested in, what they're interested in, how they're currently living their lives, how do they see the future for themselves. I've thought about that for myself. And it's a whole different conversation than it would have been if I would have just kept working, working, working. That pause, as difficult as it was, helped me to become more centered in myself as a human being.
Now, Nancy, I'm going to be 52 in a couple of weeks. I'm facing the same thing that you have faced in your past. And I never know. You know, anytime I lose a job or leave a job, I wonder, you know, how will I get the next job? Will they think that I'm too old? Now that I am in my 50s, is there a chance that, you know, somebody will look at my resume, see that it's a little bit longer than somebody who's in their early 40s, and say, "Oh, she's too old. She's not going to be here long enough to reinvest a lot of time effort in this individual." And one thing that helped me, and I found out afterward, was how important my network was to continue to build that network. And it sounds like that's what you have done, but building your network in a different way, not based on solely on your work and what you do. The first thing that you ask somebody isn't, "What do you do?" It's, "Tell me a little bit more about yourself. Where have you been? What, you know, what's your favorite food?" Which is one of my favorite parts of the show, is I get asked at the end of the show these fun, I call them my quick hit faves, so that I can learn more about the people that I speak to that I think I know, right? Most people that I talk on the show I have met in real life, and I think I know, and it's always fun to learn more. So what is the one thing that you have done to really continue to grow your network? Is that just talking boldly?
I think it is whatever I started before I got another position, I stayed connected with those people, which has then allowed me to meet other people. And I have still reached back in my past and stayed in touch with friends from long ago and helped them to come forward and do pieces of work when I hear about it. And I think there's something very gratifying about helping old friends, meeting new friends, and constantly being on the lookout for students you could mentor, because you learn so much and you also expand your own network and you become a person of a person of all ages. All kinds of people of all ages, all kinds of creeds are interested in you because you're so interested in them.
You told me one time that one of the things that happens to somebody who works in HR, typically you put others first.
Yes.
So that's also something that women tend to do, right? Women tend to put other it's part of the nurturing quality that naturally comes with being a woman. Maybe not every woman, and I'm speaking typically, I'm not talking
yes.
about everybody. So I don't want to have any letters or phone calls from
I'll give you 10 names who don't feel that way.
There you go. So, being a woman in HR, you have had the experience of putting up other people first and not lifting yourself up from the bottom of the list. So I'm sure it was a lesson learning how to promote yourself and putting yourself ahead of others and trying to make sure that you got to that next great job or that next step in your career. It's important to remember that because I think we as women and those that work HR do the same thing. We tend to constantly be promoting other people or thinking how I can help, how I can mentor. People who go into HR for those reasons. Anyway, some people just accidentally end up in HR and they really shouldn't be in HR. So let's talk a little bit about what happened to healthcare over the many years that you have worked in healthcare HR. I remember when you and I first worked together years ago, I'm not going to say how many years ago, as that would give away our age, which I've already done, but there was big talk about healthcare organizations going completely paperless. You remember those days in the late 90s and the early 2000s, healthcare organizations going paperless, and it seems to have been successfully achieved. Is the same thing happening in HR departments? Are they going paperless in healthcare HR?
I think I will first apologize to those HR organizations who can do it. I think in smaller HR departments, for sure, it is not possible. It will be going forward as the technology changes, but I have yet to walk into an HR department where there isn't some kind of paper something. And I want to segue back for a second, Rand, where...
Sure.
I think the role of HR and the way that we take care of ourselves in that role, especially women, is recognizing that the HR role is a huge influencer. At the same time, we have to speak out boldly when we're around that table and not just take a second position. We need to sit fully in the chair, and we need to speak out. So I'm sorry to segue back, so now I will...
No. That actually takes me right to my next question for you. And I've spoken with a couple of individuals throughout this series about what's going on with leadership in health and at hospital. Is there still that disconnect? Are we having to, as HR professionals, speak loudly in order to be heard? Is respect starting to be seen a little bit more, or does it still feel like it did 20 years ago?
I think it's a couple things. I think in some areas it has improved immensely, and that is just the best thing in the world to see. But a lot has to do with how the HR professionals carry themselves and how they do voice their opinion and how they build those relationships. For those who have great gifts around that, I think they're way ahead of some other organizations. And for those who are just starting out, it's harder. So
right.
A lot has to do with where you are in your career and how confident you feel and how willing you are to express yourself and build the relationships so that you can be heard.
Nancy, how did you get that confidence? Was it just you? Of doing the job, or did you just come to a place in your career where you said, I know what I'm doing?
Well, I think that a couple of things. Certainly, I went to school. I have a bachelor's and master's degree, and just having the education alone gave me confidence. I also sought out other experiences where I would learn to be a better public speaker. I would be able to appear confident even in times when I may not feel so confident. And then, of course, as time goes on, you do know what you know. And all of that kind of comes together in a wonderful package.
What is there any piece of advice you could give to maybe a young 30-year-old HR professional that is still feeling like they just haven't found that right path or don't feel like they have the confidence yet to really be that bold HR professional reference? Is there anything you can suggest that they do?
Yes, I think a couple of things. I think it would really help them to have a mentor. Find that person they admire, that person they want to talk to, that person they trust to get advice from. I think that's very helpful. I think also you have to continue to learn. You constantly have to learn. And thirdly, you have to be an interesting person. And so you've got to be interested in everything and everybody. And I think if you can sort of work on all those things, it will help you all the way around.
What great advice. Be an interesting person. So many of us think that just getting up and going to work makes us interesting, but really diversifying who you are and learning. And I love the advice to keep learning. That's the best advice out there. I am a perpetual student. I've often said that if I could make a living just being a student, that's what I would want to do for my career. So when you look at the past and what you've been able to achieve as the CARO at Providence, the work you did at TASC, and moving into the Motion Picture Television Fund, what types of HR technology have you used in the past? What are you using now? Are you guys relying on social media to hire, to employment brand your organization? What is your HR department currently doing to benefit the HR, whether it's hiring or just talent management?
Well, I think we're doing some of the latest and greatest, if you will. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we have, of course, our webpage. We're all on LinkedIn. Anything that's new and interesting, somebody is willing to try. And if we're not, then we find somebody else in the organization who is, to see if that would make a difference. I recently was at a meeting where I heard women talking about, I would never go on Facebook and LinkedIn. I think it's a way to get your identity stolen.
Oh.
And I laughed about it because it was the same thing about people who used to listen to the radio and said,
right,
you know, that television will never go anywhere. It's sort of the same thing with social media. Why would you not do it?
I always that take control of your identity. I mean, it's a way, if people can find you anyway, you are findable now. So why not take control of the information that people find out about you? That's the advice that I usually give when somebody says, what if my identity is stolen? Well, not if you keep control of your identity. It won't be stolen, right? If you are controlled. So
exactly.
So, and Nancy, go ahead.
And the other thing is, this goes to that ability to connect with people along the entire age spectrum. If you want to continue to live in your generation, well, that's one thing. But if you really want to broaden your horizons and be that interesting person, you've got to try it. Maybe you're lousy at it. It doesn't matter. At least you gave it a shot.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, Nancy. Now is myself a part of the show where I get to ask you some little personal questions about, favorite food, favorite book, that type of thing. This is my quick hit save section. So what's your favorite food?
Gosh, I would say right now, I've been trying to learn how to make fish that doesn't taste like cardboard. And half the time I'm okay, and half the time I'm still at that cardboard phase. But I'm trying to make it my favorite food.
Well, that's good. That's good. I can't wait to hear more about that. What's your favorite book? Now, this could be a book that's been very important in your career, in your life. What's new that you're reading right now that you'd like to share?
The most recent book I read that I really enjoyed is called Unforgettable, and it's by Scott Simon, and it's about a son and a mother and his journey with her and all the way to her death. Although it sounds kind of sad, it really has a lot of funny, poignant, wonderful moments in it, and I found it to be very rewarding.
Well, I will have to check that out. I enjoy books like that. It's nice to finish a book and say, that was a good book. It doesn't always happen, and it's nice when you find a book like that. Favorite place. Now, this could be a room in your house. It could be a favorite remote resort location. It could be where you grew up. Where's your favorite place in the world?
You know, right now, I would say it's my own home office because it's painted yellow. It's very cheery, and there's a lot of fun in addition to work that goes on in there. And anybody who comes to my house always seems, you know, a lot of houses people gravitate to the kitchen. In my house, they gravitate to that little yellow room.
Well, that's wonderful. And your favorite thing to do?
Gosh, my favorite thing to do. I think it's really getting together with friends. That's really my favorite.
Well, Nancy, it has been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining me. You have been one of my mentors, and I really appreciate the advice that I've received from you. That friends, we've both gone through the gauntlet of career changes, and it's nice to know that there are people in your life that will still be there for you, and you have been one of those, so I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I'll have to come up and take you to lunch soon. I would love to see you again.
Well, I would love to see you.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today on HR Latte. We'll be continuing our series on Friday. My guest will be Blake Moser, who runs and operates and owns medicalrecruiting.com, and we'll continue our conversation about healthcare HR today.